Rico Bronyas, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's favorite vodka for a reason. From the first legal distillery in Texas, Tito's is six times distilled till it's just right, and naturally gluten-free, making it a high-quality spirit that mixes with just about anything, from the smoothest martinis to the best Bloody Marys. Tito's is known for giving back, teaming up with nonprofits to serve its communities and do good for dogs. Make your next cocktail with Tito's. Distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc., Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya time. Welcome to a mailbag edition of the Rico. I feel like over the last few weeks, the last few months, every time I want to read a host of your emails, we end up getting distracted. So we have decided to commit an entire episode to your emails, thericob@gmail.com. Before we get to them, a couple of news and notes. Obviously, the headline from the Met off day is the report that Brandon Sproat is being called up and is going to start the Sunday game against the Cincinnati Reds. Couple of thoughts. Number one, no-brainer to call this kid up. His last start was utterly brilliant. He's kind of had a mixed bag in the minor leagues this year. We all figured that Sproat would be the first of the young pitchers to get here, but Nolan McClain blew past him. Jonah Tong even blew past him with the way he was pitching in Double A. It hasn't been a bad year for Brandon Sproat, but certainly it took a while for him to get here. It's had some good moments. It's had some bad moments. He's been inconsistent, but he comes to the major leagues off of one of the best starts he had in the minors, and he comes to the major leagues with an opportunity. This is a Met rotation that I don't want to use the word shambles. They're not in shambles, but there's openings. They have a lot of guys, a lot of candidates. Their veterans have struggled. Their youth has pitched well. And I have a feeling, and we've talked about this for a while, about the end game being the Mets using multiple starting pitchers in the same game to get through games. That may be the end game. But when Brandon Sproat arrives, he's getting a chance. He's getting a chance to impress, and he's getting a chance to remain in this rotation. As far as him starting Sunday is concerned, I touched on this on the last Rico. It was a great thought that came from Kendrick, who sent this email about 5 days ago, that he would try to avoid Nolan McClain facing the Phillies. And it's a great point. The Phillies saw Nolan McClain a couple of weeks ago. They couldn't hit him. If Nolan didn't pitch on regular rest Sunday against the Reds, he pitched one of the games against Philadelphia, and that would mean the Phillies would get a second look at him. And then if the Mets see the Phillies again in the postseason, they'd get a third look at him. So I really like the idea of McClain on regular rest on Sunday against Cincinnati. And then, yeah, throw Brandon Sproat in the middle of the Philly series. Is that a tough environment to make your major league debut? Sure. But aren't we testing him? Isn't this kind of, all right, Brandon Sproat, you've put all the work in the minor leagues. You're now in the majors. Here's your shot. And if it means your major league's debut is in Philadelphia against the Phillies, so be it. So I'm glad he's up here. I'm glad he's getting a chance. I wouldn't have done it Sunday against Cincinnati. I would have done it in Philadelphia, but I get it. And he's finally here. Note number two, Francisco Alvarez is going to be activated on Friday when the Mets open up their series against the Cincinnati Reds. Great. I hope Alvarez can be as productive as he was before he got hurt. He is surely showing a lot of toughness playing through the thumb injury and playing through the finger injury. Luis Torrens has done a wonderful job filling in. He just came off his first ever Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series Award. We all know how good of a backup he is. Even Hayden Sanger did a decent job filling in as basically Torrens' backup, and even got some playing time when Torrens was banged up, but it's a huge plus to get Alvarez back. The third thing is Reed Garrett pitched a scoreless inning in a rehab game in Double A on Thursday. So I don't think it should be too long until Reed Garrett gets another opportunity at the major league level in this bullpen because they could use it. For all the bashing of Reed Garrett, look at this bullpen. Gregory Soto is struggling. Ryan Helsley is a disaster. There aren't a lot of guys you can trust. And Reed Garrett has certainly had some moments this season and could very easily circle back up to the trust tree top. All right, let's get to your emails. Let's start it off with Joshua Anderson, who writes, first time, long time. Classic roller coaster of a season. But this team is kind of built perfectly for the playoffs. Starters usually only go four innings, which is our specialty. We won't have to play the freaking Marlins, and we have the ability to outhit anyone on any given night. Now all we have to do is actually get there. What helps the Mets if they're able to get to the postseason is, yeah, I mean, you're kind of right. Think about it. You have 13 guys in your pitchers on your 26-man roster come playoff time. You don't need five starters. And in the Mets' case, unless they get to a National League Championship Series, which would be unbelievable because it would mean they're going to win two rounds because, let's face it, they're not winning the division. They're not getting a first-round bye. You're looking at a wild-card series. You're looking at a division series. You only need three starters. And so if you fill out the rest of that 13-man roster with a couple of extra starting pitchers that can come out of your bullpen, you are not wrong. And that's why the strategy, which I think is very difficult to pull off over the course of a regular season, of tag teaming starting pitchers, it can absolutely be executed in the postseason. I mean, it's not even a question. Again, you have 13 guys that you can have on your roster in a wild card series. You only need three starters. That leaves you, let me do the math, 10 guys coming out of your bullpen. You could easily have three more guys who are starting quality pitchers. And yes, the Mets have an offense that right now is absolutely clicking. They have been hitting with runners in scoring position, and they also have an electric closer. And I think that's a part of why I do agree with you. Just get there. Obviously, you got to get hot at the right time. This team has been wildly inconsistent. I don't think it would stun any of us if they lose back-to-back games and get knocked out immediately. But would it really stun anybody if they get hot again? Michael writes, with the promotion of Sproat, I think the rotation should be this. David Peterson, Nolan McClain, Brandon Sproat, Jonah Tong, and Clay Holmes. It's crunch time, and we need our best pitchers to pitch more, which is why I think they should go with a five-man rotation the rest of the season. With Senga either going to the minors or bullpen, no need for a sixth man. I get statistically Peterson hasn't been great on regular rest, but if David Peterson wants to become an ace-like pitcher, like I thought he was earlier in the season, then he's got to show he can be effective every fifth day. Between Manaea and Holmes, I trust Holmes more. Even though Holmes can't get through five innings, you could have Holmes go four innings and then let Manaea go two or three innings. And that is kind of like a variation of what we're talking about, where Clay Holmes pitches four. You don't have to push him through a fifth inning. Sean Manaea gives you two more. Before you know it, you're already in the seventh inning. So I agree with that. If Tyler McGill looks great in his rehab assignments, I might rather have him as a fifth starter and put Holmes in the bullpen. McGill has pitched a lot right now on rehab, and I'll pull up the exact numbers on how he's pitched, but it seems like he got off to a very good start in rehab, and then his last few starts have been mediocre. Here's what we got from Tyler McGill. His first rehab start was back on August 12th in Binghamton. Innings and two-thirds. Three hits, no runs. 52 pitches. Not 41 pitches. His next rehab was 3 1/3, scoreless with 9 strikeouts. Dominant start. Pitch count up to 55. He gets transferred to AAA Syracuse. 5 scoreless, allowing 1 base hit, 65 pitches. So you can see, very good so far. Here are his last two starts that have not been good. August 28th, 4 innings, 4 hits, 4 walks, 3 runs, 70 pitches. That sounds like a typical McGill start. And then his last rehab start, which was on Tuesday, 4 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks. He got up to 79. He is ready. Just based on stretching him out. He's made 5 rehab starts, and he's already got his pitch count to 80. They have to activate him by next Friday because you only get 30 days on rehab, and his first rehab start was August 12th. So we're a week away from McGill being activated. And I would think, even with the struggles of Manaea and Senga going to the minors potentially, but with Sproat being here, with Tong being here, with off days also coming up, I think he's going to pitch out of the bullpen. That'd be my guess. I don't think Tylor McGill is going to be reinserted into the rotation. That would just be my guess. Steve writes, should Carlos Mendoza have left starting pitchers in longer? I know you guys often take the complete opposite view, but I've disagreed almost every time this has come up. Since early in the season, I felt like Carlos Mendoza has been too quick to pull starting pitchers at the first sign of trouble. Instead of letting them work through jams, he goes to the bullpen right away. On the surface, it's the safe or win now move, but I think it's starting to backfire. Starters seem to pitch with the mindset that as soon as they struggle even a little, they're done. That doesn't exactly build confidence, and it feels like it prevents them from learning how to battle back and adjust mid-game. I feel like this is the case, especially with Manaea and Senga. Part of being a starter is figuring out how to get through the lineup even when you don't have your best stuff. If they never get that chance, they lose that edge. On top of that, leaning so heavily on the bullpen wears those guys down too. In the long run, it feels like the quick hook has played a real role in the struggles we're seeing now. Curious to see what you guys think. Steve, everybody is different. Every starter is different. So earlier in the season, I recall many times where it felt like Griffin Canning was pushed. And I know, Hoff, you would scream about it. I would scream about it. Where we would say, come on, the guy's a five-inning pitcher. It's very obvious. So in terms of winning that individual game, react to what Griffin Canning is, maximize him by getting five good innings out of him, and even before the trouble really hits, get him out of the game. So I think with Griffin Canning, just to use him as an example, I thought it became obvious when to get him out. In the case of Manaea and Senga, there's something off about both of those guys. I think in Manaya's case, he's probably hurt. It's not to make an excuse. It's to explain what the hell is going on. We know about the loose bodies in his elbow. I mean, that was an existing thing. So I think the likeliest scenario, it's not the Mets aren't pushing him enough and he doesn't know how to get through the third batter in the order or third time around the batting order. I think it's more that he's not healthy. The Senga thing is odd. I was trying to dive deeper into Kodai's issues, you know, playing with some of the numbers, the spin rates on pitches earlier this season compared to now, velocity, fielding independent pitcher, just to see, like, what is going on here. And it feels like Kodai Senga was very lucky in the first half of the year before he got hurt. Like, think, and I'll explain it this way. How many times did we marvel at Kodai Senga's ability to just make the big pitch and get out of trouble? He was putting guys on base a lot, and he was just finding a way to get through it. And it feels like since coming off the injured list, that's just not happening. Guys are getting on base at a similar clip, not the same, but similar clip to before the injury. He's just not able to bear down and get out of it. So I don't think that's the only reason, by the way. I'm just trying to figure out how a guy can go from having a low one ERA, mid one ERA, go on the IL, come back, and basically pitch to a nine ERA. And it does feel like there is some bad luck related to it.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Joseph writes, the magic is back and we don't need a grimace. Okay. This is Joe from Little Neck. The magic is back, and we don't need a grimace. Last season felt magical. This year, some of that spark seemed missing, especially with everyone repeating the same stat about the Mets never coming back after the eighth. Middle of the summer, the games felt like a chore to watch, with the Mets seemingly inventing new ways to lose. But everything shifted when Cowboy Ohtani, Lightning McClain, took the mound, followed by Jonah Tong's Friday night start at Citi, with the crowd practically willing him through the fifth inning. Everyone I talked to is buzzing about these kids. And honestly, I haven't felt this excited since last year's postseason run. Now, the question is, how many more starts do we give Senga, Manaea, and Clay to figure things out? With only two or three starts left, time's running out. Personally, I don't think Clay belongs in that group. He's been serviceable, and I think Senga will be demoted to AAA. Everyone is suggesting that Clay should be moved to the pen, but I don't think that'll ever happen. Mendy and Clay look disgusted whenever someone suggests moving him to the bullpen. Side note, I didn't know you were a big deal radio host until last month. Well, I don't think I'm a big deal radio host, but thank you. I didn't know you were a big deal radio host till last month, and I've been listening to every single Rico since I discovered it last year. The pod is therapy. Well, thank you, Joe. We appreciate that. I do a radio show. It's on at 2 o'clock on WFAN. I do know that people find this podcast, whether it's downloading it or searching it in the Apple Store, wherever you get podcasts. I don't even know anymore. Or on YouTube. But yes, I host a radio show where we talk a lot of sports. I think when it comes to the magic, teams don't need magic to be successful. Now, you don't need magic. And I'm trying to think back to, there was some magic in 2015. Was there magic in 2006? I mean, they were just a really good team. They won more games than everybody else, and they should have won a world. They should have won a World Series. I mean, I guess there wasn't enough magic because they got knocked out in the seventh game of the NLCS against a team they should have beaten. I don't think every team needs magic, but if your point is, and I've made this point, that it feels like things have changed since the McClain call up, you are right. Now, they're not winning every series, as we've seen. They lost the series to Miami. They lost the series to Washington. They're winning at a better clip, but they're obviously not on a rampage. If you just look at the wins and losses since the McClain call-up. But there does feel like there's more hope. Because now, when you look at this team and you see the flaws, which they clearly have, you also see how those flaws can be answered. They called up a top pitching prospect, and through four starts, he doesn't just look good. He looks skeins-like good. So I do agree that whether you want to call it mojo or you want to call it magic, the Nolan McClain call-up really changed things. I want to address the nickname aspect of it. It seems like those are the two nicknames that Nolan McClain has garnered so far. Cowboy Ohtani, which doesn't apply anymore because A, he doesn't go to Oklahoma State anymore, nor do we care. And B, he doesn't go both ways. Like when he was initially drafted by the Mets, he was a two-way player. I remember reading about him, being excited about him, like one of those prospects that I was paying attention to early merely because it was unique. He was Ohtani. Well, the Mets made a decision. It turned out to be smart to say, you know what? Let's shelve the hitting. Okay, let's put that away. You're just going to become a pitcher. You're going to focus on that. And obviously it worked. He's such a freak athlete that I think taking away the focus of I have to hit, or even prior to that, taking away the focus of I want to be a NFL player, has allowed him to focus on one thing, which is pitching. And he has shot up through the system. And here he is looking skeins-like. So the Cowboy Ohtani nickname, don't mean anything. What was the other one he said? I know it's about Lightning McQueen. Lightning McClain. I don't know. It's a kid's movie. It's an older movie. My oldest son used to love it like 5 years ago. Lightning McClain doesn't do anything for me. How about you, Huff?
No, neither of them do. What I'd like to try to figure out is a way to get him to be like, now, I don't even know if you've seen these movies before. I know when I asked Sal, he had no idea. But have you ever watched the movie Die Hard?
I mean, yeah, I've seen Die Hard.
Well, Bruce Willis's character was Lieutenant or Detective McClain.
Okay.
And I think that he should be a detective on the mound or something like that. And we in his and you know it goes with the cowboy theme. What was they used to say? Yippee-ki-yay, mother effer.
I think that's the way to go. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that. How about this? I think that's
the way to go.
How about this? No offense. Like, fine idea, I guess. How about we allow, like, a nickname to become organic? You know, it just happens. Like, for example, Clayton Kershaw is one of the great pitchers of our era. Does he truly have a nickname? Like, I think I've heard the Claw once or twice, but I don't know. No one really calls him that. He's just Clayton Kershaw. So you can be a great pitcher and not have a cheesy nickname. I feel like Matt Harvey's Dark Knight was natural. I feel like Jake was not big. Jake was natural. Like, it wasn't anything nuts. I don't think he needs one. Let the kid dominate. And we're just going to call him Nolan McClain. Isn't that enough?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah. So all matters is that he is who he is and he's fantastic. And that's great. Like, Tom Seaver was, I mean, well, Tom Seaver had a nickname, right?
He was Tom Terrific.
Yeah.
He was the franchise. He had multiple nicknames.
I was about to say, like, he had like too many.
Doc so had the nickname, Dr. K. I mean, Doc was a nickname, obviously, because his name is Dwight Gooden. Yeah. I mean, they had him, but they felt natural. I think this Nolan McClain thing seems a little forced.
Well, listen. Again, back to the aura of you know, the original part of this email was last year there was a lot of aura. This year it took McClain to get the aura. He himself is the aura. We don't need a nickname is the point of it, right?
No, I agree with you. More on Nolan McClain. Danny writes, like you, I hate the plan rotation. You're spot on strategically speaking with not having McClain face the Phillies again. But more importantly, it makes absolutely no sense for our best pitcher to go 7 days without pitching. McClain last pitched on Monday, Labor Day. Let me correct him. It was Tuesday, not Monday. He scheduled the next start on Tuesday. That's ridiculous. Even if it's on Monday, that's still far too long. Hate what the Mets are doing here. That part I'll disagree with you about. So Nolan McClain pitched Tuesday. I blame Hoff for this. I think Hoffman confused him with him saying that on the midday show earlier today.
I said Monday. Dude, I've been off this whole week, okay? Can I just tell you something really quickly before I distract everyone with this? I parked on Tuesday on the wrong side of the street purposely because I thought it was a Monday, and I got a nice fat ticket. So this is how off I've been with my days. So I have no idea what's going on.
I am always off with days, and you guys may notice this when I talk about games and series recaps. I usually refer to it as game one or game two or game three because days can be confusing. McClain pitched Tuesday. His fifth day would be Sunday. That's called normal rest. I almost don't want to call it normal rest anymore because guys pitch less frequently on normal rest than they do with extra rest. So is it really normal? It's 4 days of rest. It's pitching on your fifth day. And so if they pitched him on Sunday, it would be on his fifth day, which he's done only a handful of times this season. He made 3 starts in the minors on quote-unquote regular rest, and he's made 1 start in the majors on regular rest. And by the way, there are no bad results. This is not a Senga or Peterson situation. He has been great on regular rest, so that's not a fear. But I don't think giving him an extra day is a bad thing. Like, extra rest doesn't necessarily hurt you. So to me, it's not the amount of days. It's more situating when I want the guy to pitch.
I have a wild one for you. And I don't want to move on because did you finish this email? Okay, good. So I was contemplating how we've discussed, like, you know, sandwiching pitchers and trying to get through a game that way. Hear me out. You have Nolan McClain pitch on regular rest. You have Peterson pitch on regular rest. You have maybe Clay Holmes pitch on regular rest. But a guy like Kodai Senga and Manaea, we know, doesn't work out that well to be doing that at the point in time. How about, and McGill's going to come soon too, how about we take those 3 pitchers and smush them in 1 game and they pitch 3 innings each and their pitch count is low enough that we don't have to wait for 5 days of rest. They can come back in 3 or 4 days, right? If they pitch 3 innings with limited amount of pitches, technically, they should be able to come back sooner.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, it makes sense. I think sometimes guys are such creatures of habit that it's your throw day, it's your rest day, that could kind of mess it up. But look, the idea of taking a second starting pitcher and using them in a given game where you can't get 4 or 5 innings from your starter, it's inevitable. Like, it's inevitable. And what's so unique about the Mets situation is they have enough arms. I mean, right now, they have a 6-man rotation. Senga is like the odd man out, but they're adding Sproat, who, if Senga was still around, would be their 7th guy. And they've got Tyler McGill, who technically would be their 8th guy. So they have not that all of these guys are pitching great. They're not. But you can certainly envision a scenario where Tyler McGill is really good for 3 innings, and that's it. And Sean Manaea is even good for just a couple of innings, and that's it. And so I don't know if this is something we're going to see in the wild card series or maybe before that, but I do think the Mets are built for a myriad of reasons to use multiple starting pitchers in the same game. I think that's where we're headed. I think that Manaea's next start is a big test for him, because I think the Mets are still holding out hope that Sean Manaea can be the guy we saw last year. We haven't seen signs of that, but he's going to get the baseball at least one more time. And with Senga, I think what's going to be fascinating, because Kodai Senga has that clause in his contract that says, I need to say okay to being sent down. You know, based on service time, you looked at Senga and said, oh, does he have options? I thought he did. You go to Fangraph's roster resources, he's got options. But in his contract specifically, they can't just send him down. I don't think Senga is going to say no to being sent down. I think what he's asking, and it's a great question because I want to know it too, is I go down there and then what? What's the plan? Am I going down there dominating and then we're all good and we restart this thing? Like, what's the plan with Kodai Senga? And then my other follow-up is, why Senga and not Manaea? Not that I'm sending Manaea down, but he's been as bad. Like, they both have been bad. And I think Manaea probably just ends up in the bullpen. I think, well, first of all, he's done it before in his career, so it's not like you're asking him to do something completely foreign. But with Senga going to the minors, assuming he says yes, and I firmly believe he will, I think what he wants to know and what I want to know is how long and what does he need to do down there? And I think a lot of him coming back isn't going to be dictated by him, but everybody else. Like David Peterson against the Reds, the opener. What does he do? He's coming off the worst start of his major league career. Are we about to witness David Peterson, who's done 150 innings, completely fall apart? I mean, it's on the table. Hoff's hoping for that because he's facing him in fantasy this week. But just for one start, you're hoping, and then he's fine.
I got to be honest with you. I think he's going to be fine. I think a lot of that was bad defense. Part of that was bad defense on his last start. Some of it is undoing.
No, a lot of it is his undoing. But I think that the next turnaround is a real indicator for a lot of these guys. I don't think everyone is guaranteed a rotation spot. I think Nolan McClain is. And crazily enough, he may be the only one. I think everyone else may need to be successful to retain their rotation spots. Mark Gray writes, guys, I wrote an email at the start of the season stating how confident I was in David Stearns' ability in building a championship team and adjusting accordingly during the season and the trade deadline. That confidence has now waned. It makes me so sick to know that Drew Gilbert is now an everyday starting outfielder, propelling the Giants forward in their playoff push. Why does Stearns continuously wait until the last possible moment to bring up our top prospects or not bring them up at all? We could have used that spark from Gilbert months ago when Taylor first cooled off, instead of trading for the useless Cedric Mullins and also dealing away Blake Tidwell. We literally could have filled all of our trade deadline needs internally with our relief pitching prospects and Gilbert and been far better off in the short and long term. Can you imagine if the Giants edge us out on a playoff spot thanks to Drew Gilbert? Here's a note for Stearns. Please don't trade any more top prospects for effing relievers ever again. No matter how good you think they are when they get here, see Helsley, Soto, and Rogers. And don't trade for a mediocre veteran just because he has more experience than a fiery, energetic top prospect who will probably be better than the veteran anyway if you just give him a chance. We can live with a bad trade once in a while, but not an entirely crappy trade deadline that cost us dearly in the future and present. And I really don't want to pile on, but I could bring up how stupid it was to sign both Jose Siri and Jesse Winker in the offseason when we had Gilbert, Acuna, McNeil, and even Ryan Clifford and Jet Williams as potential outfielders. Drew Gilbert, let's start with him. I am not ready yet to, you know, basically look at that trade as an all-time bad one. You know, Drew Gilbert has been productive for the Giants, and that's good. I think a part of why the Giants were comfortable calling him up is because when they decided to trade Tyler Rogers and they decided to trade Camilo Duvall, they were making a decision that they were out of it. And when you're out of it, you kind of make decisions a little bit differently than when you're in it. Drew Gilbert, on the other hand, wasn't performing at a level in the minor leagues that made us believe they had to call him up. So I think that's a little Monday morning quarterbacking. You know, Gilbert was not tearing it up. Drew Gilbert was a fallen off prospect. That doesn't mean he can't continue to be successful for San Francisco, but it is a little Monday morning quarterbacking to say, hey, we could have called him up. I mean, if I was going through his numbers at AAA throughout the year, would you have wanted me to say, let's call him up? And also, the Mets have better outfield prospects than Drew Gilbert. Carson Benj is another guy who, if they really wanted, they could have called him up. I know he was only drafted a year ago, but he's performed at every level. So I think when you're in a pennant race, you still prefer the veterans. And also, I don't think they were ever in love with Drew Gilbert. And Drew Gilbert was not banging down the door the way Jonah Tong ended up banging down the door, or Nolan McClain. Well, you're right, and we can go through it, is that David Stearns' trade deadline, there's no arguing the results. They've been bad. Now, I still think Tyler Rogers is and can be a valuable reliever for this team. I'm losing hope in Ryan Helsley. I don't even know how you use him anymore. He's been so awful. Cedric Mullins also should lose playing time. He hasn't been productive. Can that change if Cedric Mullins gets red hot? Of course it can. As of right now, a month after the trade deadline, it's a failure, is what it is. And if you want to go to the offseason, Jose Siri has been a waste. Jesse Winker has been a colossal waste of money. The decision to sign Frankie Montas was a bad one. The Clay Holmes thing, I can't say is bad. I think if you, when they signed Clay Holmes and said, we're going to make him a starting pitcher, and I told you, here are his numbers, and I gave you his numbers right now, I think you'd say, wow, that's a pretty good job. Now, another thing you can get on David Stearns for comes from Casey. Guys, I'm sick and tired of talking about how pathetic this deadline was, how poor the rotation is, and how soft the bullpen is. What I'm not sick of is ripping David Stearns and his lack of foresight. I just watched David Robertson make easy work of the Brewers in the seventh inning of a one-run game. The fact that this guy isn't a Met is criminal. If he was here, we wouldn't have had to have traded what feels like 3 million prospects for three bullpen arms, none of which have been any good. David Stearns whiffed, misread the market. Again, hello, Frankie Montas. And I'm sick of the guy. Smartest guy in the room by ass. Now he'll be praised for bringing up the kids. Newsflash, he waited way too damn long with McClain and Sprout. And the only reason he's doing it is because every single one of his moves have been dog crap. And he has no choice. Otherwise, all three would just be toiling down in AAA just to make sure they're 178% ready for the majors. Sorry, he's the most overrated executive in the sport. There is no denying the moves. We can go one by one. We've touched on a few of them. You threw up David Robertson. I hated that they didn't sign him. We did a Rico talking about it, and I don't know if I screamed, but I certainly said, why were they not involved? Well, I mean, they were involved. Why didn't they sign him? The Phillies got him on a reasonable prorated trade, or prorated contract. I think Robertson enjoyed being here. We know he could pitch in New York, and you didn't have to give anything up. While you did give stuff up for Helsley and Rogers and Soto. So I completely agree with the Robertson thing, and I agree that this hasn't been a banner year for David Stearns. I don't know how anyone could deny that. I don't go to the extreme of I'm sick of him. He's overrated. I think that all executives, good and bad, are going to have their whiffs. There's been a lot of whiffs this season. There's no denying that. But this team is still in position to make the postseason. So it hasn't been that bad, I guess, from a result standpoint.
Well, not for nothing, but that's kind of why I kind of went off on when I saw that. And I never went back and listened to the audio between Joel Sherman and John Heyman to David Stearns regarding Carlos Mendoza. Should he come back next year? And he was like, obviously he's coming back or whatever the case is. That's no question. Like, these guys have helped put a team to the NLCS and they're going to get back to the playoffs. Why are we talking about their jobs? But this was a big cluster F this offseason. And I'll start with this. Jose Quintana is making $4 million
this year. That's another one.
$4 million this year. And I just got off of, I was a guest on a podcast that they were talking about Frankie Montas. And for that price, what it is to pay somebody on the back end of the rotation is not bad. Dude, Quintana is $4 million for 1 year. I know there's a mutual option for next year, but you're paying Frankie Montas $34 million for two years. Overpaid. How much is Clay Holmes?
Yeah. Well, Clay Holmes is $12 million, $13 million. That's actually a steal for a back of the rotation arm, believe it or not. I can't get the Holmes thing. I don't think we should pile on. I think that is looked into a good move. That's a decent move.
I'm not piling on, but again, decent move as a back of the end rotation, but you could have gotten cheaper and smarter.
So the Quintana thing, if we're being fair, is that he only got that amount of money because he had to wait in the spring training to sign. And the only time I raised my voice for signing Quintana was once the Mets were starting to be hit by injuries in spring training and Quintana was still there. To me, it was an easy sign. It was an easy bring him back. And I was surprised when I saw how little the Milwaukee Brewers gave him. So I wasn't banging the drum for Quintana in December and January, but certainly once we got to mid-February, late February, and the Mets started to have some injuries in their rotation in which their depth was tested, I thought Quintana was an easy add back. But I don't think it's fair to group Holmes with Montas. Clay Holmes is still starting games every 5-6 days, and he has a sub-4 ERA. Like, I get it. He's, you know, 4 2/3 is not acceptable. I'm not arguing that. But they paid him less than what a starting pitcher would normally get. So based on the value and the performance, I can't call that a bad move. And the way things stand right now, Clay Holmes may get a playoff start. So it's not. And speaking of playoff starts, here's Jay Alter's ideas. Evan, our focus should be on the Reds and only the Reds this weekend, but I saw this on social media and I want your take. Piggybacking the strategy the Mets rotation should employ if they reach October. Game one, Nolan McLain into David Peterson. Game two, Jonah Tong into Clay Holmes. And game three, Kodai Senga into Shaw Manaea with Brandon Sproat as an X factor. Nolan McLain does not need a piggyback. Now, could he have a bad start in the wild card series? Of course. I mean, anybody can. But Nolan McLain should not even be in this discussion of he needs a piggyback. The guy takes the baseball and at the minimum will give you 6 innings. Even his first major league start, he could have gone 6, but I thought Mendy was being careful. I think the other piggybacks, yeah, I think we're certainly looking at that. I think David Peterson, too, probably doesn't need a piggyback. I think Peterson, if he's right, and he's obviously been inconsistent over the last few weeks, but if he's right, I don't think he needs that. But Clay Holmes, Shaw Manaea, Kodai Senga, if he's back in the rotation, absolutely. And we'll see about Jonah Tong. Jonah Tong is still such a mystery to me because the one start he made was fine. It was fine. He got lucky getting through the fifth inning, but he also was pitching in such a weird situation. You know, you have a 12-0 lead, and no one's ever going to throw that back. That 12-0 lead is great after two innings. But you got to think he was attacking very differently. So I think that Saturday against Cincinnati will be a great test. Benji Horowitz writes, guys, you doing the Rico mailbag. How about you mention the Rico Bronya bingo game? Remember I mentioned this, guys, to you? That Benji put this together, that we could have a Rico Bronya bingo card, a list of all your favorite things to say or do on the Rico. 24 spots on a bingo card, 24 Rico mainstays Let me know what you think. Here we go. Here are the 24 things I guess I like to say or do on the Rico Bronya. And so this could be a new game. Number one, mentioning Juan Soto's solo home runs. I think I do that on every one. Number two, quote, some games just feel bigger than others. I do say that a lot. Number three, we take pitch counts way too seriously both ways. That is absolutely true. Number four, blaming the offense for not scoring too many innings in a row despite scoring 5+ runs total. Yeah, they'll score like 5 runs in the first 3 innings. They'll do nothing later in the game. They'll lose 6-5, and I will blame the offense. Number five, we turned insert opposing starting pitcher into Christy Mathewson, Sandy Koufax in his prime. Number six, calling any opposite field home run Piazza-esque. So far, I'm going to tell you, Hoff, this is all very accurate.
No, and it's great. He's nailing everything. It's perfect. The Tom Seaver, Christy Mathewson, he nailed that one.
Mispronouncing a player's name. That is a given. Messing up a very well-known phrase, a la Michael Scott. Very true. You'll love this one, Pete. Just completely ignoring a dumb comment made by Pete Hoffman and moving on.
You do that. That happens often.
Explaining how insanely consumed the Met game was. Explaining how insanely you consumed the Met game 6 hours after it happened. Mentioning the Mets group chat or his fantasy team. Yeah. It was a slow death. That was one of my quotes. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a lot of slow deaths. Number 14, fart in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Number 15, defending Pete Alonso's defense. Number 16, obscure early 90s player reference, particularly from the worst team money could buy. Number 17, traffic patterns, especially if doing a drive home Rico. Number 18, I haven't done this one in a while, but number 18 is protection for Pete Alonso in the lineup. That was big last year and the year before, where I would always complain how Pete has no protection. Talking about how aces take the ball every fifth day. Mentioning the importance of tiebreakers. Quote, circle of trust. Figuring out when the Mets have to insert a sixth starter. A mention of his wife, Jet or Spence. And then finally, quote, when they didn't score there, you just knew, a la Joe B. Yeah, I think all of those are pretty damn accurate on a Rico Bronya bingo card.
That is great. That, when are we going to play the game? We have to start playing this game. Next drunk Rico, we do it. Whip it out.
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, people have said we should do a Rico during a Met game. And it's usually popular to do it during one of those national broadcasts because everybody loves SNY. Everybody loves Gary, Keith, and Ron. So why would you do a live game during that broadcast? They do such a great job. So I guess we have to look at the schedule and find out the next time they have an exclusive national broadcast, which they don't have against Cincinnati. Oh, you know when they have one, if I'm not mistaken? Their 4-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies wraps up on a Thursday night, September 11th. And that's a Fox game. That's an exclusive one. But I'm going to tell you right now, I cannot do a live Rico that night. That's my son's birthday. So that's out. Sorry about that.
Well, you know, that's a good reason to skip.
That's a good reason to skip.
That's a good reason to skip the live Rico. Yes.
Aaron Frank writes, Evan, is it crazy that I sit here and think there's still time for Ryan Helsley to turn it around? Even further, I think this is possible even with the issue not being tip pitching. At this point, it's all mental pressure where he can't go out to the mound, focus, and just throw strikes. He's overthinking everything. I'm starting to doubt all this pitch tipping talk because if it were so bad, we would have videos and more people explaining what the tip actually is. I don't buy the subtle hand lowering, etc. I think he just has the yips at this point. This all is so irrational. But how can a pitcher that has been overall above average with the Cardinals over the last calendar year come to the Mets and just shit on the mound every start? not even with a good start to keep the hopes up in between. It has to be mental, or he just sucks. Loyal listener and Soto, the one that hits the ball, not gets hit, enjoyer. No, he's a Soto fan. I don't know what it is with Ryan Helsley. Like, I get it. You think it's yips or it's mental or it's not pitching the ninth inning or it's New York or it's tip pitching. I don't know anymore. And I don't want to waste our mental energy trying to figure it out. I think the only thing worth our mental energy is just figuring out, can you ever pitch this guy? And if you are going to pitch this, ever pitch this guy, when? And so my answer is, he has to be in the lowest of low leverage situations. And we saw Mendy sort of do that for a little bit. And there are enough guys in this bullpen where you can hide him. Like, the thing about the other day that annoyed me was Tyler Rogers was available. Like, they could have pitched Tyler Rogers in a one-run game. This idea that, well, they had to pitch Ryan. They didn't have to pitch Ryan Helsley. They had a bullpen that was relatively fresh. You know, they didn't have to do it. And so Mendy needs to do a better job of hiding him, or they've got to get rid of him. Those are the two options, because now they cannot use him in any close game situation. Can't happen.
Do they actually have any options for him? Can he get sent down?
No. He's about to be a free agent. I mean, I said this on the last Rico. I still can't believe this. And this will fit the old obscure Mets reference. He is worse than Billy Taylor. He's worse than that guy, he's worse than Mel Rojas. When we compile our list of some of the worst relievers to ever suit up for the New York Mets, it doesn't get much worse than him. Kyle writes, good morning, Evan and Hoff. First, I want to say that this email is completely based on getting into the playoffs. If we make it into the playoffs, I think everyone can agree it's going to be as a wild card. So I conducted the best scenarios that come with each potential opponent. God willing, we make it to the promised land. So out of the playoff picture right now, the four teams that we could potentially be lined up against in a wild card series are as follows. The Dodgers, the Padres, the Cubs, and the Phillies. He is correct about that. The Brewers are not falling, and the Mets are not making the playoffs along with, like, Cincinnati and San, and they're not playing them. So it's the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Cubs. That's it. So he is right about that. If we play the Dodgers, they have powerhouses lefties in Ohtani and Freeman. So in the Dodgers series, the best way to prevent that powerhouse lefty from exploding in the series is to go heavy southpaws. My approach would be absolutely McClain, and then I would pitch Peterson and end it with Manaea. I know that both Peterson and Manaea haven't had their best stuff, but both of them are our best bet of containing Ohtani and Freeman. If we play the Padres, they have a ton of lefties: Arraez, Merrill, O'Hearn, Cronenworth, and Sheets. So once again, I would go with McClain, Peterson, Manaea to prevent the big lefty bats from producing early in the game and putting us in a hole. If we play the Cubs, they don't have as many lefties, but the lefties they do can really hurt us. They include Kyle Tucker, PCA, and Michael Bush, all of which are having high productive seasons. If we can minimize the big bats early in games, and I don't see why we couldn't compete in a three-game series against the Cubs. If we play the Phillies, they have an assortment of lefty bats that can hurt us, including Harper, Schwarber, Stott, Marsh, and Kepler. But once again, I'd still go McClain, who dominated them in the first start against them, Peterson and Manaea. I believe after reading this email, you can see the trend that our three best pitchers to start each game would be McClain in the first, Peterson in the second, and Manaea in the third. The opponent's lineups indicate that southpaws could be their kryptonite, and if anything, we need to have some faith in at least two of our veterans to show up in October when it matters most. I'd love to hear your take on this, and as always, God bless the Metropolitans. I don't think we should overthink this if Manaea is not pitching well. Like, I get the point. I get the matchup aspect of it. Mendy did a great job of doing that a lot last year. But Sean Manaea's got to prove he can get outs. And he's got to be good. And he has a huge start coming up against the Phillies, one of the teams you just mentioned that have plenty of left-handed bats in there. He's got to go out there and be effective. If he's not effective, I don't care which hand he throws with. You know, this is, to me, going to be about effectiveness. Jonah Tung and Brandon Sproat, it's too early to call. It's like an election, right? The votes just came in. We can't call the election yet. Jonah Tong has made one start. Brandon Sproat hasn't made a start. The story of them and how we feel about them making postseason starts, too far away. And that's why I agree with the two guys you mentioned at the top. I think David Peterson has done enough throughout this season. I think the one thing that could damage him is if he just continues to pitch badly, then you got to reevaluate. And Nolan McLain, even through four starts, has been just so good that barring him collapsing, he becomes a guy you feel very confident about. So I think the final month and the final 22 games will dictate that. Speaking of 22 games, if the Mets could just rattle off 17 out of 22, they make the postseason. There's nothing the Giants can do. There's nothing the Reds can do. But realistically, I look at these 22 games, and San Francisco has become a bigger threat than the Cincinnati Reds, surprisingly enough, because of how hot the Giants have been. They are four games behind the Mets. The Reds are five games behind the Mets. The one advantage Cincinnati has is that the Mets are about to play them for three games. They do not play San Francisco again. But I think over these 22 games, and yeah, 17 and 5 would be great. If they could go, let's just say 13 and 9, that should be good enough. Now, I want better than that. I mean, I'm not saying my goal is 13 and 9. This is a team that has not had a sustained stretch of just winning a lot of games since prior to June 13th. They've had good stretches. They had the 7-game winning streak. Even now, you can certainly deem a good stretch, but I'm talking about an extended one in a long time. But I think 13 and 9 should be good enough. I think 14 and 8 should be good enough, because then you're forcing the Giants to basically win every single day. As far as the division's concerned, that's out. And that's been out for a while. I know they have four games against Philadelphia, and I did say on the Rico prior to the series at City, they're not sweeping the Phillies. You know they're not sweeping the Phillies, and I took my L gladly. I'll say it again. They're not sweeping the Phillies in Philadelphia. They're not. And in a weird way, if they're not going to win the division, don't sweep them. Because God forbid they play them in the postseason after beating them 11 out of 13 times. Wouldn't that make you a little nervous? I mean, come on. Would that not make you just a tad nervous? 11 out of 13, and now they got to play in a best of five series? That freaked me out. So here's what we got coming up. We have David Peterson trying to rebound on a Friday night against the Cincinnati Reds, trying to bury them. A big bounce-back performance by Peterson against Andrew Abbott, another lefty that has had a very good season. We got Jonah Tong on Saturday night. We have Brandon Sproat on Sunday. It hasn't been announced, but Manaea McLain in some order. Hopefully McLain on Monday. Manaea on Tuesday to follow, with Clay Holmes coming up after that. And it does set up Jonah Tong against Jacob deGrom on Friday night, assuming everything holds up. So the passing of the torch angle of a deGrom-McLain start may look a little bit different. And who knows about Tong? I mean, by the time we get to Friday night, deGrom return night, we may be thinking Jonah Tong is the long-term answer. So exciting times as the Mets try to lock down a playoff spot and make the postseason for the second time in a row, something they've only done two previous times in their history. We do appreciate the emails. We like to mix in some mailbags every time we can get it. So keep the emails coming to ricob@gmail.com. We'll have Rico Bronius throughout the weekend, including our big series recap after the Mets-Reds series. I can't promise you a time that day because it is a busy Sunday. Jets are opening their season. The Giants are opening their season. But like we always say, we can guarantee it to you at some point on Sunday, either live on YouTube or in your inbox when you download the Rico Bronia, you'll get a series recap of the series against Cincinnati. We do appreciate you listening, downloading, and hanging out with us on a mailbag edition of Rico Bronia.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronia podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.